I'm Tori.
And I'm Audrey.
And we're
powered by Riverside FM.
The darker side of human nature and exploring the unknown.
From chilling true crime and gruesome murders
to spine-tingling paranormal encounters, we cover it all.
So grab a flashlight
and maybe a blanket,
because you're listening to The Guilty and the Ghostly.
We're back, and it's kind of a different scene now.
Yeah, we got our pretty wall.
Yeah.
Our beautiful couch.
Yes.
We can't wait to add more.
Very happy how it's turning out.
Me too. Like, I would love for my whole house to be this vibe.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Our wall is blank right now. We're going to add pictures and decorations up there too. And
I'm pretty sure we're going to change it up eventually along down the road. And we're going to get two chairs instead of a couch.
Yes. We're in a tiny, tiny room.
Yeah.
And
it's like a mud room, basically.
It's very narrow, and our couch is too big to fit the other way. But we're doing it. A little bit at a time.
Yeah.
Somebody got us, not chairs, tables.
Yes.
And then somebody forgot them.
I'm that somebody.
It's Tori McKenzie.
What?
Whoopsies. But that's okay. We're here. So, anywho, so we want to start out with some shout outs.
Yes.
This week, the podcast has grown so much on the social medias, like huge. And we want to thank you guys for that. So keep commenting, keep sharing, keep tagging, following, rating,
liking.
All the stuff.
Telling your friends, telling your family.
Tell, you know, when you go order a Starbucks, be like, hey, check out this podcast.
Yeah.
Do it. We appreciate it. So we have a few people that we want to shout out that they tagged us or have been commenting a little bit more than others. And as we get more, we'll just keep on doing the shout outs until it gets to be where it's just too many. Maybe yeah. One day.
Yes, maybe one day when we get there. But we'll always remember the OGs. And here is that list. Tessa Coralie Roycraft.
Thanks, girl.
Thank you so much. Mickey Parker. We really appreciate you.
So much.
Brian Kramer. Lots of love. And Candace Taylor.
So thank you guys so much. Again, yes. We couldn't do it without you guys.
Thank you. And if it seemed like I was struggling to say y'all's names, it wasn't y'all's names. It was Audrey's handwriting.
No, so. It's just Tori.
It might be my eyesight.
It's Tori as a person.
Who knows? I don't.
Nobody knows about you.
Anyways.
So you ready for a story?
I am so excited for a story. Elizabeth was really excited, so she's just going to have to listen to the podcast on her flight tomorrow.
Yeah, because we were yelling at her to come in here, but she ignored us. So.
Yeah.
Talking about you, girl.
If you're listening.
So, today's story is a true crime one again.
Ooh.
But it's different. Technically, there's a murder, but it's not a normal murder story.
Okay.
This is about bank robberies.
Like Bonnie and Clyde?
Kind of.
Ooh.
There's a twist.
Okay.
So, let's get comfy.
I guess.
Oh, my computer's asleep. Okay, so we are in May of 1991. A gentleman walked into the American Federal Bank in a suburb just outside of Dallas in Irving, Texas. So, we're in Texas still.
Okay.
He walked up to the bank teller where he was greeted and he passed her a note that read, "This is a bank robbery. Give me your money. No marked bills or dye packs." She then handed all the money that she had in her drawer. The man just gave her a nod and calmly left the bank. Just what gone. What the heck? He's just gone.
Okay, so I've actually seen, like, a movie like that, actually.
This, I seen where they were going to, but I don't know if they ever made a movie, but this would be an awesome movie.
I've definitely seen a movie like that. I can't remember the name of it, though. Might have been a TikTok reel. Who knows?
Girl. So, the man just left the bank calmly, and once he left, they, of course, contacted the authorities. Robbing a bank is a federal crime, so they brought in the FBI.
Right.
They began reviewing the surveillance footage and interviewing the employees. The suspect looked to be like an older man with a bit of a belly and a beard, hat, sunglasses, khaki pants, and a dark shirt and a brown leather jacket with black gloves. Now, mind you, we're in Texas. In May. It can get hotter than a hoochie-coochie
here. And that is really weird to wear all that.
So, yeah, him wearing the leather jacket and the black gloves, it's really the only thing. Yeah, the only thing that really stood out. The rest of it, him wearing everything else, the cowboy hat, he just looked like a regular cowboy. Look.
That's sketch, y'all.
Cowboy on the top, business on the bottom. You gotta do what you gotta do.
Mullet. Do you have a mullet?
Actually, I've got a picture for you. Okay. So, other than that, he just looked like a regular cowboy coming into the bank to take care of business. They noted that he looked very calm, acting cool as a cucumber. He wasn't watching over his shoulder looking for security guards. In fact, he almost kept his head down the entire time, keeping his face out of the view of cameras and making it difficult for the employees to make out any identifying marks. He didn't seem to be carrying any weapons, and he did not make any threats. Just walked in, slipped the note, walked right back out. He didn't seem to be working with anybody else, and he was obviously aware of marked bills and die packs since he told them to leave them out. So let me show you a picture of him.
So what's a die pack? What is that?
I will explain that in just a minute, because it's actually very interesting. I listened to another podcast, and I note who it said it, and they did a very good job explaining them and how they work. Just looks like an old man. Sunglasses, hat, gloves. What? Why are you looking at him like this?
It's a really blurry picture, y'all.
This is 1990s.
Oh, okay.
It's the best they got, man. You can't zoom in.
Oh, shoot.
That's the best I can do. Somebody let her phone die, otherwise I would have just sent it to her. So you forgot the tables. You forgot to charge your phone. I
forgot to charge my phone.
Your phone.
I'm hungry. I only ate a salad today. So you better get it.
Good job. Yeah. At least you ate your veggies.
It was a chicken salad too, so I got my protein in.
Ooh, that's not gonna sound good. So, there was a podcast called All Crime, No Cattle, and they discussed the die packs and how they worked, and I thought it was really interesting. So, it is important to the story later on, so I'm just kind of going to explain to you what they are and how they work.
Okay.
They said the packs are often inserted in between decoy stacks of money. They will actually hollow out the money out and that way to avoid the detection. The die packs used to be very stiff and easily found, so when they would slip them in there, they were, like I said, very stiff. They didn't flex with the money, and so you would pick a stack of money up, you could tell pretty quick that it was in there. They've since started making them much thinner, harder to find, unless you actually flip through each individual bill. I'm getting there. I'm getting there, girl. So they made them thinner so that you would actually have to flip through each bill to try to find it. But if you're robbing a bank, you don't really have time to do that. So you need to get the money and you need to go as soon as possible. So the decoy packs are actually kept in a drawer with other money to try and make it not as obvious, and they're able to slip them in easier. So they keep the decoy pack of money in their drawer with the real money. They are magnetic and they keep them on a metal plate in the drawer to make sure that they are not accidentally given out. When the pack is removed from the metal plate, it will set off a radio receiver. Each of the entrances of the bank have another transmitter that sends a signal to the die pack that will actually activate them once they walk by them, once they get within so many feet of them. they're set on a delay so that they won't explode right there. And they will actually explode red dye once they exit the bank. So once they explode, a huge cloud of smoke will basically just emit from them and it dyes everything red. That way they know that's the bank robber. They stole the money. So they sneak these dye packs and those decoys. They go through the bank, the entrances of the bank, and it sets off a transmitter, and it kind of, I guess, sets it on somewhat of a timer. It said like any 20 to 30 seconds, but the idea is that's going to explode once they leave the bank, hopefully in the getaway car, and it's easier to identify who stole the money.
Dang, I didn't know that.
You'll have to watch the videos of them going off. It's literally, you know those smoke bombs that you play with a kid? It's like taking 20 of those and sticking them in your pocket and letting them go off. It's crazy. Holy. And because of the chemical reaction to set off the explosion, it gets up to 400 degrees. So you can't just grab it and throw it once it happens because it'll burn the crap out of you. Because it gets up to the 400 degrees. So at this point, they can actually trace any money that has dye on it. So even if you're able to get the red dye off of it, it still leaves a chemical on it to where they can actually trace. If you try to use that money later on, they can actually trace it from the red dye being on it. I looked up to see how many cases have actually been solved with the red dye. And as of 2019, it said over $20 million and 2,500 criminals have been apprehended due to the dye packs alone.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. I thought it was kind of interesting.
That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people. So we're going to go back to the bank robbery. FBI agent Steve Powell was brought in to investigate. He had been working bank robberies in the Dallas area for about 30 years at this point. He was, like, the coordinator of bank robbers of that area. So if there was a serial robber where they go to Oklahoma and rob, then they come down to here to Texas, they normally kind of follow the same pattern. And so he's able to link it and say, oh, this same guy robbed this bank and this one, and kind of puts them all together.
Yeah.
So he gave the cowboy a nickname. He nicknamed the quiet and polite robber, Cowboy Bob. Cowboy Bob. That's what they nicknamed him. They were absolutely determined to find Cowboy Bob, but had no leads to go on. They had no clue who committed the robbery. One thing that Agent Powell did see on the footage was Cowboy Bob's hat was on backwards. So maybe he's not a cowboy. Maybe he's just a pretend cowboy.
He's not a real cowboy.
So about 7 months later, December of 91, Cowboy Bob is back and he would commit his second robbery. This time he entered the Irving Savings of America. He parked his car directly in front of the bank this time. And just like the first robbery, he calmly enters the bank wearing the same clothes as last time, approaches the bank teller, hands her a note, and makes it out of there with about $1,200.
Dang.
However, this time when he goes to leave, someone sees him get in a brown 1975 Pontiac Grand Prix and writes down the license plate. Which, that amazes me. People that can look at a car and be like, oh, that's a 1978 Grand Prix.
Yeah, like the year model. Yeah,
Josh number. Can do that crap, and I don't understand it. I'm just like, it's a freaking car.
Another brand, and it's because I'm looking at it.
The logo.
Logo.
And chances are I probably got that wrong, too. So they go to the house that was actually associated with the plate numbers, and there was a very confused woman. They're like, hey, your license plate, your car is involved in a robbery. So they start doing investigating. Her car doesn't match the description of the car that robbed the bank. So it was just her license plates. So come to find out, Cowboy Bob stole her license plates off her car and put it on his car to go commit the robbery.
Ooh, that's smart.
That's smart. That's very smart. So once again, Cowboy Bob is one step ahead of the police, and they're still no close to figuring out who he is. The very next month, January of 92, Cowboy Bob strikes again. This time, he enters the Texas Heritage Bank and gets away with about $3,000.
More than last time.
4 months go by, and then the nation's Bank of Mesquite is robbed. This time, the bank teller tries to sneak in a decoy stack of money with the dye pack. But Cowboy Bob catches it, hands it back to the teller, and walks out the door. He ends up with $5,317 this time. He just keeps upping it. He keeps upping it. And the fact, and he found the dye pack. Like, she tried to slide it in there, and he's like, oh, nope, you're taking that one back. So by this time, the FBI, they're growing more frustrated. Cowboy Bob seems to always be one step ahead of them. September comes around, and for the fifth robbery, he gets $1,722. A witness sees the same car as last time, a brown Grand Prix, gets the plate. Yet again, the plates are stolen. So he stole the plates again.
He's just too good. But he's like, is he stealing them and not replacing them with his plate?
Right. He's just stealing the plates off of them.
Dang.
And then, of course, the car owners don't know, because how often do you look at your license plate before you get in your car?
Like, never.
So while they're still looking into the robbery from earlier that day, they get another call. Cowboy Bob robs the sixth bank. Second one of that day. This time, he went to the First Interstate Bank, and it was only about a mile down the road from the first one that he robbed that day.
Why did they not, like, up their security?
Because Cowboy Bob is slick, man. He is slick. So, getting his largest amount so far with $13,706. The bank teller said he almost seemed excited about the amount he got, tipped his hat to her before he left.
Dang.
Again, they see the same car take down the plates. But this time, the plates lead them to a Pete Tallis, a man who worked in a factory in Carlton, Texas. They are registered to a car that matches the same description as the getaway car this time. Cowboy Bob messed up. They track him down, and what do you know? He owns a brown Grand Prix. But he states that he no longer has possession of the car. He had loaned the car to his sister and his mother over a year ago. They then tell him that the car had been used in a robbery, and Pete Tallis says, and I quote, "Bullshit. This car can't go that fast."
Oh my gosh.
He then gives the address to his sister and his mother's apartment. So I guess the Grand Prix ain't going to move too fast. His sister had been taking care of her mother after she had been diagnosed with a degenerate bone disease. His sister also had some medical problems of her own, resulting in a back surgery and mastectomy. The bills were starting to pile up. They needed a vehicle, so he was just trying to help him out by loaning them the car.
Yeah.
So Steve Powell then goes to the apartment, and what do you know? The car is parked in the parking lot. So he's pulling up and sees the car, and he's like, well, I need backup. So he just kind of pulls over to the side just to keep an eye on it and is waiting for everybody else to arrive. They're kind of having like a little powwow in the parking lot to come up with their plan before they go to the apartment.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to tip off Cowboy Bob that they're coming, and he escapes. So he's kind of hiding out. So while he's hiding out, he sees an older white woman walking to the car. She gets in the car.
Oh.
She pulls out. So he has to make a really quick decision. Do I sit here and wait and look for Cowboy Bob, or do I follow this car to see where the car goes? So he decides to follow the car and hope that...
I would have done the same thing.
Yeah. He's hoping that Cowboy Bob's girlfriend is in it, and he pulls the woman over. Just once she's out of the view of the apartment, because again, he doesn't want to tip off Cowboy Bob that he's on him. So he waits till she gets to the end of like the parking lot, out of the view of the apartment, and he pulls her over. Once they pull her over, she identifies herself as Peggy Jo Tallis, sister of Pete Tallis. So this is the sister that he loaned the car to.
Okay, makes sense.
They questioned where she'd been that day, and she told them that she had gone and picked up some fertilizer. They searched the trunk, and sure enough, there was a bag of fertilizer in there. And Agent Powell told her that the car had been used in a bank robbery and asked her who used it that day. She said, just me. And he basically tells her that, you know, they're here. It's all going to be over soon. Just tell me who has used the car. And she replies, it's only been me driving the car. So he asked, who's in the apartment? And she tells him, it's just my elderly mother. Like, it's just her and me in there. And she really wouldn't share any other details. She just wouldn't, she wouldn't answer, or she'd give really short answers when he would ask her questions. So at this point,
either, because it's like,
know your rights. Know your rights. Yes. So at this point, Powell stays with Peggy Joe, and he sends other agents up to the apartment. He's like, let's go catch this guy. He's in there. He's got to be in there. She's not answering our questions. So he sends the other agents up to the apartment. While they are up there, Sergeant Powell's staying with Peggy Joe. And the agents come back, and they tell Powell, and they say, hey, we found the beard. There was a beard on a styrofoam head in the apartment. And they also found the hat and a jacket and a firearm. So Powell goes back to Peggy Joe and says, hey, we've got the disguise. Just tell me, where did he go? Where's he at? And then the agent comes back out while Powell is trying to get more information to tell him they've located the money from both robberies that day. And this guy, when you think like a Texas FBI agent, like when you hear him talk, it's exactly what you think. And I was listening to a podcast where he got interviewed, and he said, Hot Rod, this is over. You have to tell us who he is. He said she was very calm. She never lied to him. She was very honest. They were going around in circles with questions like, who are you protecting? No one. Who else has access to the car? Just me. Where's Cowboy Bob? There is no Cowboy Bob. So on and so forth. So some time had gone by at this point, and Agent Powell sits in the back seat with her. He's worn out. The light's kind of changing outside since the sun's going down, and the light just hits Peggy Joe just right. And Powell notices that she has some white flakes in her hair. Then he realizes that her hair had been sprayed with colored hairspray. It was drying up and flaking off. He then realized she had residue on her face. He finally puts two and two together and looks at her and says, you're my bank robber. And Powell and the other agents arrest an emotionless Peggy Joe. They were completely amazed. It was a woman robbing the banks the whole time. So this woman...
See, I had a suspicion, but I was just, like, on a long stretch.
Yeah.
But for it to be real, like, for real...
Six bank robberies, two in one day before she got caught. It was a woman the whole time. In disguise.
That's insane.
And let me tell you, Peggy Joe in her younger years was a freaking smoke show. Look at this picture of her.
Let me see.
She is absolutely stunning. We're going to tell you a little bit about Miss Peggy Joe.
Okay.
So Peggy Joe was born in the 1940s in Grand Prairie, Texas. She lived with her two older siblings and her mother. Her father died when she was young from cancer. She was known to be sort of edgy and like a free spirit. Like, I heard one story where she got pulled over in her teen years and the cop was trying to like give her a ticket, and she basically ripped the ticket up and just threw it at him and said, I don't accept that. Like, she was kind of wild. She had many different jobs. She never really stuck with one for very long. She was known to have one serious relationship. She was absolutely head over heels and in love with this guy, until one day she sees his car parked outside with a woman inside of it, and she's like, what the hell? So she goes to the woman, she confronts her, and she's like, what are you doing? And the woman told her, I'm sitting here waiting for my husband. So that's how Peggy Jo found out that he had an entire life, other than her. And this completely broke her. Like, it just devastated Peggy Jo. She was completely heartbroken. After that, she never really showed interest in relationships or starting a family of her own. Peggy Jo did have one dream of one day moving to Mexico and living on the beach, which that sounds amazing.
Period, queen.
I would do that.
Is that why she was getting all that money?
Maybe. Then in the 80s, her mother became very sick and needed like round-the-clock care. Peggy took on the role, moved in with her. Her entire life revolved around her mother. Like, I've seen where she got up in the morning, she'd make her breakfast, give her medicine, get her out of bed, make her bed. Peggy Jo didn't really like to eat early, so once she got her mother situated, she would go eat her own breakfast, smoke her cigarette, and drink her Pepsi in a coffee mug. She's a vibe. She's a whole vibe.
I felt that, low-key, except for the cigarette part, low-key.
So
good off that.
Peggy took on the role, moved in with her, entire life revolved around her. Medical expenses soon started piling up along with the cost of all the medicine. She felt like she was drowning. She no longer could live the carefree life she had once. One friend stated that Peggy Jo would be the first one to help anyone, but just couldn't accept help herself, which that's sweet and heartbreaking at the same time. So that is when Peggy Jo decided to rob the first bank. She purchased all she needed for the disguise and put a towel in her shirt to alter her physical size, I guess to kind of cover up her womanly figure and kind of make her look like she had a belly, make her look a little bit bigger than what she was.
That's smart.
That is smart. Very smart. No one could believe that she was Cowboy Bob. At the time, less than 5% of robberies were actually done by women. And of those 5%, most of them normally were accompanied by a man, or they were due to funding a drug addiction. It was never just to rob banks. So Peggy Jo was not giving any information up. She remained completely silent. When asked about any details, she basically said she accepted what she did and she wanted to move on past it. Like, she wouldn't discuss anything with her lawyer. She wouldn't discuss anything with her psychiatrist. She would just smoke her cigarette and shrug her shoulders when questioned. She'd just be like, I don't know.
Free spirit vibe.
She is an entire vibe. So the only thing that she shared was that the first robbery was supposed to be a one and done to help her mother pay for the medications. And it was supposed to be that one, be done, and no more. But after she did it, it was really easy. And she was able to get that money pretty quick. And so she did another one. And another one.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes
life pretty easy.
Yeah, and then she seemed to be very smart, and it seemed to be very thought out. Like, the license plate thing, not speaking so they couldn't identify her voice, disguising her physical appearance, not just, you know, the fake beard and stuff, but putting the towel and stuff around her. It was really smart.
Low-key, if she was really smart, she should have became a valet while she was doing all that.
A valet? Why?
Because while people are inside at the restaurant eating.
Just steal their shit.
Take their car.
Oh, okay. See?
And then go.
I got you.
And rob the bank while they're eating. After you're done, just take their car back. Take your own car.
Due to her not threatening anyone, not using a weapon, and having no prior record, she was only sentenced to 33 months in federal prison for the 6 robberies. So, almost 3 years.
Wait, that's actually good.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. One, like, she was only getting small amounts when she was robbing. She never made out with a whole lot. She was very polite. She didn't threaten anybody. She didn't have a weapon, no record. So they're like, almost 3 years and you're good. So once she finished her sentence, she was offered movie and book deals and had the potential to make decent money off of that. She declined and said she wished to move on from it and didn't want the publicity. She remained a very private person, and her mother moved to a small town home. She began working at a local marina. She was known to be very generous and to help people in need. She would sometimes pick up the tab for customers when they needed bait. So if it was like a small bill and they'd be short on cash, or sometimes she would just pick up their bill for them.
That's sweet. Wait, did she just get to keep the money that she stole, or did they
confiscate it? No, they confiscated it, girl. They took that. They ain't gonna let her keep that. So everybody that worked with her, again, she was very generous, very sweet, very honest. Her till always came up like right on the dime when she would work. She never stole money from the marina. It seemed like she was very happy where she was at. Then in December of 2002, her world flipped upside down when her mother passed away. She no longer... That is very sad.
Oh my gosh, don't tell me that. It's so sad.
I just want to break your heart. So her whole life revolved around taking care of her mother. And by that time, her mother was completely bedridden. And so like her whole life revolved around her. So once she passed, I'm sure it was a relief that she was no longer in pain. But then I'm sure she almost felt lost because
that's all she knew.
Yeah. So Peggy Jo then decided to sell basically all of her belongings, give it away, got rid of it, and she purchased herself an RV. She then began traveling all over Texas. She seemed to get back to that free spirit that she was once known to have. Then in October of 2004, a man wearing a big black hat, gloves, and sunglasses walked into the Guaranty Bank of Tyler, Texas.
Joking.
Nope. He gave the teller a bag, but this time he didn't slip a note. He just said, "Give me all your money, no bait bills, and no blow-up money." He calmly walked out of the bank with an undisclosed amount of money. No one seen the getaway car. Employees said he had a patchy mustache. His voice was very soft, almost feminine. And they never did find the suspect. So at this point, Agent Powell has retired. If he was still working cases, he probably would have picked her up immediately. Because it even said he taught classes after he arrested Peggy Jo. And that's one case that he would always bring up because he was just so fascinated with her. Because she was always one step ahead. She always did everything right. She disguised everything. But I think what bugged him the most is she would never talk about it. She would never explain why or whatever. It's always that mysterious. So if he would have still been working, I bet they would have known exactly who it was immediately. They never did find the suspect. And then a year later, the same bank was hit again. The suspect walked in with a big floppy hat, a black shirt, pants, and sunglasses. They walked in and said, "This is a robbery. Do not set off any alarms." The teller gave them a total of $11,241.
Dang!
That's crazy. Mexico! So the robber said thank you and left the bank because, you know, they're polite. When the suspect made it outside the bank, a dye pack explodes, staining everything red and leaving behind a big cloud of red smoke. She didn't check for dye packs this time. The suspect runs across the street to a jack-in-the-box where an RV was parked, and they started to drive away. And a family witnessed everything and called the police. They actually followed the RV until the police were able to catch up, and they said this RV was like puttering, blowing smoke, like on its last leg when it was going. It was barely going, and they were following it. They followed it into a cul-de-sac where it came to a dead end and stopped. At this point, the police have no clue who is in the van or how many suspects they're dealing with. Someone closed the curtain to the RV and it went silent, and no movement could be seen, causing a standoff with the police for about 10 minutes. Not knowing how many suspects were inside or who they're dealing with, they started demanding everyone to come out of the RV. Weapons were drawn, and all they could do is wait. All of a sudden, the door swings out and they see an older woman. She yells to the police, "You will have to kill me." The police officers told her they didn't. Just leave the vehicle. Everything will be okay. She then says, "You mean to tell me that if I come out with a gun and point it at y'all, you're not going to shoot me?" Again, they are asking her just to exit the vehicle. The elderly woman steps out of the RV with a gun and points it right at them.
Are you serious, bro?
I'm fixing to break your heart. Police officers then end up shooting and killing the suspect. They throw tear gas in the RV to ensure no one else is in there. Once the RV is cleared, they identify 60-year-old Peggy Jo.
She was 60?
She was 60 at this point. After she was robbed a bank. And they even said that when she closed the curtains, girl was smoking her cigarette.
Oh my God.
They cleared the RV and identified her as 60-year-old Peggy Jo. She was the only one that was in the RV, and this is the heartbreaking part. The gun she was holding was fake. It wasn't even a real gun. After searching the RV, they did find a real gun in the RV, along with $38 and, of course, the money that had been stolen that day. To this day, they still do not know why Peggy Jo robbed the bank that day or why she didn't use a disguise like in the times past. Some believe that she may have just been getting ready to live out her dream and living in Mexico on the beach. If she had completed the robbery that day, like she had the others, there was a good chance they would have never caught her. And that's the story of Cowboy Bob, a.k.a. Peggy Jo Tallis. And what's crazy is she had a real gun. She could have brought the real gun and shoot him, but she chose the toy gun. It's almost...
Why did you do that to me?
She's a vibe.
She wanted to, like...
I think she was done, and she knew she was caught, and she didn't want to go back to prison, but she was so sweet, she didn't want to hurt anybody, because she could have taken that real gun out there, but then there's a chance that somebody could have got hurt, so she grabbed the toy gun instead. But yeah.
That's horrible.
It is. But I thought her story was so interesting. I would love a movie on that.
Me too. That was really good.
Now what?
Now? What time is it?
10:10.
Now we gotta go to Walmart.
Why are we going to Walmart?
Well, me and Alice are going to Walmart.
What are you guys going to Walmart for?
She's leaving for her flight tomorrow, so we gotta get containers and stuff.
And she said she had to get up at 4.
Yeah.
All right.
All-nighter. Well, that was a good story. I'm sad she had to pass away.
I know. I
think she wanted it.
Just wanted to be done. Yeah. It is heartbreaking. Like I said, it'd be a very interesting story or movie or something just to see her life. And kind of, I want to know more about her teenage life, like her younger life when she was just being crazy and ripping up tickets and throwing it in the cop's face, being like, screw you.
Yeah. I think that would make a good movie, Loki.
Yeah. So I think next week I'll try to do a paranormal story. I don't know if we'll do the local one. It depends on if we can get over there and look around. So, but we'll pick paranormal. We need some paranormal. We haven't done that one in a couple weeks. So, and hopefully our internet will be back on. We're using the hotspot. So if it sounds bad, we've had storms.
We're sorry.
We're so sorry. And it burnt the electrical plug outside. And now my husband has to fix it. So. All right. Well, that's it. So I guess we'll see you guys later.
Bye.
Goodbye. Still recording. Okay, now we're done.